This episode of Unquasi Unfiltered is brought to you by MTN Zambia. There's no us without you, so we say thank you.
So this morning, I'm really, really excited to introduce a marketer, a DJ, a comedian. That one surprised me because I've never really had a conversation with
that, like,
on the low.
Yeah.
Mr. Coca-Cola man, but most of all, Mr. Panji Banda, which really, really excites me. And I'm really glad we could draw you out of the cupboard. So welcome to our conversation. Welcome to Unfiltered. Welcome to China's Seat. And welcome to your seat.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And it's a real honor and privilege to be here.
Really great. Okay. I have to tell you, you have made my... I almost called in to say, listen, guys, I'm not coming.
Okay.
Because it's the Pope's funeral. And this is... When it was announced as a national day of mourning, I was like, that is my... This one... Yes, as a Christian, as a Catholic, I really felt that this was a day of national mourning. So I am here on this particular day, and you made it lighter because on the way, of course, I was listening to everything. I almost said, I can't go. I have to be like, I have to watch the funeral. But you spoke through it so well this morning and gave us the history as you do. You're such an encyclopedia. It was amazing. And I felt much better, like, okay, I can leave home because I've been given the life of His Holiness in a...
He was a door bouncer as well. You know.
That's it. That's it. He was a bouncer. That was really interesting, the facts that you pull out. And you're just really good at that, pulling out encyclopedia and little things that people wouldn't know. So we're talking now. You said, so you had one pair of shoes, one pair of sandals.
Sandals, actually, not even shoes, sandals.
I think I'm a winter.
I don't know. But again, remember, is that true? We don't know, because sometimes they throw this stuff at you.
Exactly.
But it did appear like a very humble person.
No, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm really glad we're meeting today. It is it's a important day, but also important for us to be here. And at least we've recognized that and we've done that. But from here, I'm rushing to the TV to finish watching my funeral. Yeah. So Panji. Tell me about Panji Banda, who, for me, Banda doesn't work. Banda, half the time, we're speaking
Chibemba.
Chibemba, grew up on the Copper Belt.
In fact, not just a Chibemba, real Bemba.
Real Bemba.
No accent.
No awe, no humbleness, everything, I love it. So, and I have been listening to your, for me, I've known you from your radio program for the last 14, 15 years. Yeah. So my Saturdays are made up of that, no matter where I am. I could be traveling. Yeah. I'm like, nope.
Listen online.
Yeah. Got to listen to it. Got to get into the groove. Got to listen to the stories. I love the stories.
The stories.
So tell me from the start. Do we have to do that from the start? Because you've been asked that from the start.
Yeah.
But no more tell me when you said, you know what? Telling stories in that way is what I want to do and what I really enjoy. Tell me about that. How did that happen?
I think so. Maybe I grew up with radio. Remember radio from the 70s when the parents, you sat, I remember everybody sat on a radio. Then everybody listened to This Is My Song. Timmy Voloy actually.
Lusaka Copper Belt?
No, so remember that was, remember there was only one radio station there.
But where were you
on
listening?
On the Copper Belt.
Right, yeah.
The Copper. So remember you wrote in, you didn't phone in, you had to actually write letters.
And sent it.
And every week you'd wait, is your letter going to be read? And it wouldn't. So I was drawn to radio, I think, at a very early age.
Yeah.
Let me say radio and TV.
Yeah.
And so, you know, listening to radio then, you know, listening to songs, recording songs off radio, you remember, trying to catch other foreign stations, which was tricky then.
Mm.
I think if you were lucky, you caught Bop TV.
Right.
And that was more common in Southern Province, or like at the crack of dawn when it's all quiet, you could get a signal because they had different things to offer. So I was pretty much like into radio, paying attention to information.
Yeah.
You know, what are they saying? And maybe later on, to your point, when now radio became more... I still remember when Radio Phoenix was the first...
yes, I remember that.
...private radio station. And you won't believe this.
So exciting.
I was working at a bank, which was near where they were auditioning for. And we heard like the auditions are
different. For DJ.
Because I think radio presenters.
Presenters. And, that was a more.
And there were three of us who said, hey, let's go. Do you want to do radio? I'm like, maybe I've always wanted to. Let's go. So I said, okay. So we snuck away from work. I still remember there were three of us. And you know, there was a queue of people. And obviously, I think there was this guy. I think he was obviously from South Africa. And he was just like, next. You know, you come in, you sit, speak into the mic. No, next. You know, sit. And I went there and I was nervous and I fumbled. And he gave me this look like, are you kidding me? Out. Next. You know, so that was my first experience. I'm like, maybe I can't do this. So I continued listening, you know, to radio. Obviously, you know, the 80s, what happened with the 90s now. Now radio being more open. And I think by the time now I was settled in industry, you know, like working, I still listened to radio. I still wanted to do radio. But the question was always like, how? How are you going to get into radio? And what was interesting is Errol Hickey then, as you know, he was the
founder,
the owner.
Yeah.
So at work, like I used to deal with him professionally.
Right.
Like just professionally for work folk. So then I'm like, can I ask him? Like I want to get on radio, you know. But again, you don't want to draw the line between like, you know, you're getting favors through work.
Yeah.
So I'm like, nah, maybe I shouldn't ask him. Then one of my friends say, look, just ask him. The least he can do is say no.
Yeah.
So one day, you know, like I said, I called him. I said, I want to see you over something personal. And I always ask myself, I wonder what he thought, you know. Then he says, oh, yeah, you know, it find me. Come. And I went to him and I said, look, I want to be on radio. And he says, oh, have you done radio before? I'm like, no. And he says, okay, just go and see this person. And, you know, he gave me a name and said, go and see this person. And then you're like, was it that easy? Now you get nervous.
Yeah.
But I got to the studio that time. It was at Indigo House. And I saw, I think she was Mrs. Pemba.
I was going to say, was it Mrs. Pemba?
And I thought she was going to say, oh, you're here, sit down, there's the mic, whatever. Then she says, we have to audition you. And they're like, what? I'm going to fail again. But, you know, they said, speak into a mic. I think I was more relaxed, spoke into the mic. And they said, okay, actually, you know, I don't know.
Did they give you like a subject?
Or? No, they just say talk, say hi, whatever. Then they said, okay, we like the way your voice sounds and whatever. Okay, come next week, Tuesday. I'm like, oh.
Oh.
Or whatever the day was. So then you started. I remember I was spending time with Paddy. Time with Blaze, you know, and pretty much to cut the long story short, that's how I got on radio. And it was a bit nerve wracking in the beginning. But I think with time, like anything else, you know, you pick up things, you learn things, still learning, you can never stop learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think in a nutshell, that's my story. Now, as you know, my genre is old school.
Exactly.
One of the things that used to upset me was people would play old school songs and just give the title and that's it.
And no story.
And then I'm like, no, guys. Every single song has a story.
Yeah.
So hence the storytelling. Because remember, like with every song, there's a story or there's something that it reminds you of. And I think that's how the storytelling came into being. Yeah. And putting the two together. And then also, I think,
because you managed to combine the story of the artist and then you localize it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, guys, do you remember at this disco when we were like trying to get in and all of that?
I mean, it's funny, like, you meet people now, you know, like at work, like maybe you go to a board meeting and you see board members in suits and you talk. Then I'm like, I remember what song you like. Like, of course, this is after the meeting.
Yeah.
And you tell them and they're like, wow, I had forgotten about them. Say, yeah, but see, I can remember. So I think I have this knack of remembering.
I think you've got a good
things.
Memory.
Yeah, yeah.
Remembering things. And you put it well, you really well together, the detail. Yeah. That's what attracts me to the, it takes me back and it must take so many people back.
Yeah.
I was looking on your site.
Yeah.
You've got thousands and thousands of us. Yeah. People over following you.
But so here's a funny part. So when I started my page, obviously, because I've got, they're old now, like my older kids are in their 30s and the late 20s. So even when I was starting the page, they're the ones who are like, why don't you start a page? I'm like, no, I'm just on radio. But like, oh, we'll start it up for you. Like this was like 15 years ago. So it started. And so I remember when, you know, now, and you check the followers every day, you're checking. Yes. Then I remember I started getting a certain demographic.
Yes.
Like 20, 21 year olds. And I remember telling my kids, because they were about the same as, no, I don't want this demographic. I want, you know, like, man. Then they're like, no, the fact that now you're able to attract people outside your, you know, what is a good thing. I'm like, oh.
Because obviously they're also learning from that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the younger people, because they don't get, and also they don't listen to radio.
No, see, in fact, very few people listen to
radio. I love radio, so I've got them all lined up in the car. There's just something about it, and I can't get away from it. Yeah. It's like the genuine part of it, the spontaneity, it's live, it's fresh, it's not calculated very much, and just watching how it's evolved. Yeah. For me, I find really fascinating. And I'm a bit judgmental of like different DJs and presenters. But it's had to evolve as well.
You've always heard me, I joke about this, like DJs are not like politicians. Like you try not to condemn your friend or when you're at an event. So for example, when you're DJing at a wedding, that's why I always tell my wife, like when she invites me for a wedding, I'm very... What's the term? Because I can't sit still. I'm fidgeting. Because when I'm at a wedding, I'm playing.
As a guest, you're nervous.
And then you try, like I say, not to say anything bad about the DJ or the music they're playing. Because you try to be. Because I know how it feels when it's the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
But to your point, and I always like listening to different radio stations because you also need to pick up something.
Yeah,
So I listen to someone like, how did he get on radio? Like you're saying, then you listen to some, you get encouraged, like, okay, at least they're trying, you know, to do so. Yeah, so to your point, obviously, with the number of radio stations we have, and to your point, one of the things that used to irritate me when, for lack of a better term, kids are playing our music, they get the title wrong, and I'm like, they should stay away from that space,
leave it to us.
Yeah, so that's pretty much like the story. Yeah.
But I also listen to a lot of, I don't know if you do, a lot of international stations.
Yeah, I do that.
But I also listen to oldies from different countries, like stations playing...
our kind of music,
Our kind of music, but in different countries.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've seen you do a lot, and I want to know how you do this, which some people do, some people don't, is the amount of research.
Yeah,
maybe for you, it's a... Look, even if it's once a week that you're on
this
particular program, maybe it's less research. I don't know how presenters who are on the radio every day, how much time they spend doing a lot of research, but you have to now because, you know, you're going to be, you have to know your stuff, basically. Yeah, exactly. And then it gives content, it gives value, it just changes the dynamic, even for the station, if your presenters pretty much know what they're talking about.
So some of the stuff, for example, the stuff you always know, the stuff you have an idea about, and the stuff you have no idea about. So, and to your point, one of the things I always say is when I'm saying something, I know, even if somebody came and said, no, me, I have a different version. I can say, look, you know, and you can back it up with some. So I'll give you an example of even the Pope, Pope Francis, the late Pope Francis, like for today, I always knew, like, remember when he got sick and whatever, remember we had the Pope John Paul who visited us in 1989, 4th May, and he's the one who actually made late Pope a cardinal.
Yes.
So when you look at that story, then you remember, oh, I remember this Pope John Paul, he came here in 1989.
My sister gave him flowers.
Oh, wow. Yeah. See? Yeah, so at least I'm able to remember that. Even when I read up, I know that it just authenticates what I already know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't always go that way because you know something and then you read something completely different. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a very simple example. The name of the Copper Belt towns. Like I grew up on the Copper Belt. So, and my father used to work in the personnel office and he brought this book home like for an induction. So every
what's
time...
the personnel office? Like civil?
Like HR, you know. Now. Okay, now it's people and culture. It's not even HR.
Yes.
So he had this book that had all the origins of the mining towns. Remember, so when you joined, they gave you a book. This is where the name Fulira came from, the way Chingola and so on. So I remember one time someone posted and I was seeing like Mufulira and they said, no, the ladies used to walk around naked. And the older people would be like, Imanish Mufulira.
That was
the name of Mufulira. And I'm like, I felt like, you know, like I said, I can kill this person.
Because
the history is there. Like the name of Mufulira, where it came, it has nothing to do with that. But you see, a lot of people follow that and they're like, yeah, it's true. People used to wear minis, so bad, full. I'm like, no. See, so I know that even if I've read up, but I know that book for me, because I used to read that book when I was young, that explained the history of all the towns in the Copperbelt, how they came from. I can use that and say, no matter what you say, my friend,
I got it.
This is the truth. Yeah. So it's usually about backing what you know. Yeah.
So some how did the Bandas? So
it's hard to find some information, but most of it is out there. Yeah.
How did the Bandas end up in the Copperbelt?
I think, you know, remember the 60s when the mines on the Copperbelt were, it's like what's happening in Northwestern province now. So everybody from, see, not just across Zambia. Back then it was the whole Africa. That's why in our neighborhood we had people from Tanzania, Malawians, Zimbabweans. Remember, because everybody came to the mines to work.
Right.
So, and of course, then the Bembas, you guys. And James Mapoma is one who told me this story, and I always quote him so that I'm not misquoted. But when you arrived on the Copper Belt to work mine, when you were coming from Northern Province, remember there was no electricity there. We're talking about the late 50s, early 60s. When you reach Copper Belt, you'd see lights and you'd be surprised that, what am I light? See, like I said, his word. He's 100 years now. We can trust what he says. Yeah. So that was the, you know, and remember, because of the Bemba influence, most of the locals who came, so pretty much everybody started speaking Bemba,
of course,
started behaving as, you know, as, and I like what Michael Sata used to say, that Bemba, everybody was a Bemba on the Copper Belt, not necessarily by tribe, but, you know, by culture, by the way you behave, by the way you talk, by the food, you know, chikanda and all those things, you know. So I think that's where the Bemba came from on the Copper Belt. Pretty much everybody spoke Bemba. It didn't matter whether they were Banda, Lungu, Zimba,
and proper
Mono,
Bemba.
That's why, and you've heard me refer to myself as a Bemba Banda.
Yeah, Bemba Banda.
Because I remember one time again, talking about MCS, he used to call me at Ndefa Bemba Banda Likuisa. You know, and he said, and he tell people that he speaks Bemba not because he's Bemba, but Wak Copper Belt. Yeah. So and I think I'm not sure if that's still happening now. Maybe later on, because now the mines are in Northwestern. So maybe in the next generation will be people speaking the language there from Northwestern.
Do you miss that?
I do.
Yeah,
because I think it had a lot of togetherness. And remember, you didn't know that your friend was from Southern Province. Yeah. These are from
the
Eastern
Bembanus
Province.
Yeah, together.
Everybody just spoke one language. You didn't care who was from where. Unlike now, you know, I think we're making such a big issue of where you're from. Yeah, which we grew up, our parents didn't care. We didn't care.
Yeah.
But now it seems some people care, and it's quite sad if you ask me.
So when did you leave the Copper Belt?
Officially, I think I'd probably say,
go on.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
I know, go on.
19. So when I did my primary there, I did my secondary there, did uni there, I did uni at Copperbelt University.
Yeah.
My first job was in Lusaka, 1994, like after university. But I had worked in Lusaka in 1988 at the post office, would you believe?
Yeah. Nice.
That was during like my gap year. So I think that was pretty much like it. And every time you go back there, obviously you see what has changed, what hasn't changed, you know, a lot of nostalgia.
What's the one memory from school that just like, eesh, either like I wanna remember that, I wanna go back to that, or I really don't, I just don't. That
so is it like primary or secondary?
Either. It could even be like somewhat.
So maybe let me give
you a daunting teacher or something.
And I think this is what I always tell, even like when my kids were going through school, I was telling them that. No peer pressure. So, and I'll give you a very good example. When we went to Pelembe in 1984, and remember Pelembe Secondary School then was like, you know, of course, us who went and forever a man, you didn't just go there. Remember, you had to meet a certain criteria.
Yes.
But there was a lot of peer pressure because remember there you had ministers' children and, you know, you had, you know, lots of so-called big bosses.
Yes.
And, you know, so, if you thought you have an mind, you know. And all we had was just our education. So we worked very hard so that you can get that level of acceptance. And what I remember there, and I think it was a turning point, and I always use this as a life experience. Remember, that was the days of breakdancing and all that. So I knew, like in Moof, you know, my home small town, We used to do break dancing. We used to do all these things. And I was like one of the best in MOVE.
And now?
I'm not going to break dance now.
No, can you make some moves? It doesn't go away.
I'm not going to make them now.
Now, after, we close.
In fact,
are they still there?
They are. But the last time I tried something, my wife said, if you ever try that again. Because I actually, like, I strained my some muscle here, you know, and it was quite painful.
Sorry. We'll do it afterwards and the cameras off. I need to see it.
You need to see that. Yeah. I can show you. I've got some moves anyway. Yeah. So what I learned was, remember, because there were variety shows being organized.
Yes.
And you were scared because you're like, no, I'm not as good as these people from Lusaka, you know. Because they get to watch these videos on holiday, you know, because they travel, they go to the UK on holiday. And you know Lusaka people. That's why I'm always making fun of Lusaka people. They're like, hey, Xe, as we've seen the video, Xe. And they're trying to put you down. And you do feel, you know, intimidated. But I still remember, I think it was a guy who was doing Form 6. It was Christopher Mleng. Oh, no, Kai Elasiami. He's like, you know what? I've seen you. Wipe out Rwanda. I've seen you wipe out. What
he's saying
are
this
you
to
scared
you.
Of? Yes, he actually said, it was him. I'm the one who's organizing this variety show. I'm putting your name down.
And these would be like afternoon variety shows. Everyone's like
you used to come on the weekend. Right. You know, everybody, you know, they'd be miming, they'd be break dancing. And he says, I'm putting your name down. You have, because I've seen these people you're scared of. I mean, I was like, and I've seen you, you're better than them. So I think. In life, and that's why I'm saying, I always refer to that point, like sometimes even when you know you're good at something, you feel intimidated by people around you.
Yeah.
And until you come out and put yourself out there, you won't really know how good you are. And I still remember that day, like we practiced and we practiced.
Was it a group or just
so you? They were a group, so well, a duo actually. So there was me and somebody else. And I still remember on that day. I still remember that day like it was yesterday. You know
what were you wearing?
It was like
what were you
so
wearing?
I can tell you, like, we were a tracksuit bottom with shorts over it. That was a dressing. Yeah, you wore shorts over your tracksuit and sneakers, and you know those what do you call them? A Tuma Shaba do short like this. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I still and then
bandana.
Bandana. I still remember that. I still remember we danced to "Let's Break the Ice." That was the side, and it was amazing. And see, then you come out of that now and everybody's like, and then he actually puts you like, actually, I belong. So I'm
so the DJ knew what, or do you have to take a
so
tape?
So you have to tell them like, okay, this is a song.
Or not like you take a tape.
Sometimes
and say,
like if they didn't have, you gave them like, I want to do this song. So for me, like that was a turning point. So much. So even later on in life, like for example, even applying for certain positions, you feel like I'm going to put myself out there, you know, you go, because you've been there before. Otherwise, you feel like, no, I can't do this. This is for somebody else, you know. So
is that a lesson you've
yes, and I, and that's the lesson that I've taught.
How many bandas are there?
Three.
Okay. At 30?
31, I hope I get this right. 31, 27, 18.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, and I've told them, I said, life and also like school, you know, peer pressure, just be who you are. Because we used to have people back then who, and I'll be very frank, like I come maybe to kind of my section, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But when we're with these people, you lie. You say, no, me, I'm from, you know. And again, in life, you learn that don't lie about things like that. That's one thing I like about Copperbelt people. And you've heard me saying this on radio. If you could be anywhere, you know, in London, in Paris, if you meet someone and tell you in Ndwa Copper Belt, they won't just end there and say Ndwa Copper Belt. They'll tell you, Marekala
Mchumwemwe.
Yeah. Pals number 15.
They're
you know.
Proud.
Yes, you know.
They're proud.
But, and I don't know you Lusaka people, and I've challenged people. I said, tell me, everyone you meet from Lusaka out there, I'm from Lusaka. End of story. Okay, could you care to tell us what? No, I'm from Lusaka. Like, it's rare, and I'm speaking honestly from my experience. Maybe I'm being biased. I've never met someone that goes, oh, yeah, ina kuido Karinga. Or Kabwata. Maybe there isn't people from Kabwata, but it's so different from the Copperbelt. People tell you house number 22, section 5. That's a three-bedroom house. That's where I grew up, you know.
And even when they visit,
they
still
want to go there.
They visit, they go back, and they're very proud.
Yeah.
So I think it's, look, I think it comes back from the era of what was happening then, from the pride. Look, that built the nation. That's the time that the nation was being built. Yeah. So, of course, you know, we were proud to be in a two-bed. People were proud to have been in that two-bedroom house, cleaned, you know, cleaned. Come in, see our house.
Three meals every day. Absolutely. You worked, you woke up, you swept.
Yeah. Polished red. There's no us without you, so we say thank you. Tell me more about your children. What are they doing?
So my older son, he's getting married. Yeah, finally. we've done all the
details.
So he's getting married, I think August. Yeah.
Right.
Then my daughter, my oldest daughter, she's 27. She's still staying with us. She's done all her uni and whatever. She's working. She's very, one thing I like about her, she's not like, you know, the way we grew up, like you could never, and I'm using the word carefully, challenge Abafiash.
Right.
If you know what I mean. It was always, they say this and you do, yeah, okay. But I liked, like, when she was growing up, I think she could challenge you as parents on a number of things. And I'll give you an example, like doing house chores. She used to be like, okay, why am I the only one doing house chores? What about him?
Right.
And she'd refer to the brother. And then she'd be like, yeah, actually, what about him? So they had, like, he's doing the dishes, then she does it the next day, you know, he's sweeping. So at least, you know, so those kind of challenges that as a parent, because your parents did it this way, that's the only way. But remember, we're changing now, we're growing up and things are different. So she taught us a lot. I think, like, as parents, you don't always get it right. Sometimes you have to listen to your kids. Yeah. And then our last one, she's 18. She's actually about to go to uni. She keeps reminding us that, you know, you guys are going to be alone. So so I think you're at that stage where, you know, you're getting to the empty nest.
You talk about that a lot on your station as well. Yes,
because I've seen the effect that it has on people.
Yeah.
In fact, just 2 weeks ago, I even did a video, which, I mean, once I edit it, I'm going to post it on the page. It was the last school run. And then you realize that, look, I've been doing school runs since 1995. And see, now it's not there anymore. And see, as much as you feel happy,
the car will just...
Yeah, in fact, sometimes you find yourself turning like, oh, why am I going this way? I'm supposed to go this way. So I think that's the space that where we're at now. And yeah, it is, you actually realize that time is going, you know, like things are moving, although your mind might still be like somewhere else, but this is the reality. And you've seen what it happens to your friends who have the empty nest, you know. And if you're not careful, you find that your marriage might get affected. Because I'm sure you know, like, once the kids are grown up, you find that maybe you don't have much else other than the kids who are keeping you together.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can get counseling, maybe not in our culture. But you mean, you know, like, especially in the West, you get counseled when you're entering that stage. Because I think it's something critical that we always take for granted, you know. When we were growing up, remember our generation, they were always...
But there's always somebody else coming in and going out the door, the niece,
but nephew. Yeah, but see, you're getting to a point where it ends here and everybody's gone. So, yeah, so it is something. It's an interesting place to be in.
So maybe we have to look more into Coca-Cola. And I want to hear more about this journey. First of all, you did the post office for some time.
So I did the post office like for a year.
Yeah.
And then see, and I'll tell you
what do you want to do?
So now I'll tell you what. So remember, I mentioned that I was at Pelembo Secondary
School,
which was, remember, sciences, as you know, at the so-called pure sciences. Did very well, obviously, at the end of the year. Then applied to do sciences. I wanted to do A levels. And you know where you plan to do A-levels, you get through the first phase with all your friends and everybody like, And then the next stage, you know, I didn't make it. And I can tell you now, that's the last time I cried. I still remember, like, I went home because I wanted to do that so much because I wanted to do computer studies. You know, it was a new thing there and I was very good at it. And I remember I went home and I cried and my mom was like, nah, you know what? There must be a reason why there's a Of course, there must be a reason, you know. So then we were told, and remember those days, you listened to your careers masters. they said, so all of you are going to University of Zambia. And remember those days you applied when you're still in school.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't, it's not like now. And then I'm like, no, 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 my career's master. I've heard that there's computer studies at Evelyn Home. I want to go and do that. And he says, there's no way you're coming from Peremba, you're going to go to Evelyn Home. Impossible. I'm like, but I've checked, I've been told that they've just introduced a course. It was actually a course called data processing. Can you imagine? That's the nearest there was. And he said, no, Unza. Okay. So we went to University of Zambia. 1 year, as you know, in natural suffering, had no clue what on earth I was doing there. You know, and again, it just, and then I started envying, you know, like my friends who were doing law, because see, that was their second choice. Remember, if you didn't get in sciences, automatically you went down to the second choice. So people put humanities. So a lot of them who had second choice were not picked on science, got to do law and the humanities.
But now it's different,
you know, yeah. So of course, after 1 year, I mean, I knew even before the gig was over that I'm not going anywhere here. So I flunked, yes, and I'm saying that with honor. And that's how come I got a job at the post office. I was working for a year, didn't quite know what I was going to do then. You've heard me talk about this on radio. You know, the
order. Were you doing a sorting?
No, money orders.
Oh.
Remember those days you came and you if you're sending money, you handed over the money physically. Then you did that telex thing. So the electronic message was sent, whether it's Chingola or whatever. And one thing I learned there is it would get very busy towards school opening day.
Yes. Mm. So, post office, then after that, sorting money.
So, postal orders. That's
postal orders, called. Let's
and begin. Something I learned there, and look, I was pretty young, obviously naive in a lot of things. People come, you meet all sorts of people. Remember, you met normal people, you met nurses, you met doctors, you met generals in the army. And one thing I noticed, like, you know, the generals, the colonels, when they came to send money, they were very polite. You know, they were always professional. But it's like the regular soldiers, you know, like, hey, man, throw the money at you. And, you know, then it starts showing you that, you know, people actually have, this is, again, something I learned. People who have status don't show it. You know, that's why I'm talking about the generals, the colonels, because they're always, you know. And in fact, you were even forced to be like, oh, and they come, well, sir, please skip the queue. Come in front, you know, but the normal person is always the one, you are useless, you're slow. So you also learn that people come differently, people bring their baggage from wherever they are and try to throw it at you, and you learn to just be here. Because remember, if you take in the, you know, the mood, whatever, it also affects you. So that's one thing I learned, I think, quite early, that people come differently. People who make the most noise are usually the ones who lack self-confidence. And so, yeah, so after that, then I had a cousin who had just returned from the UK, and he was in business. And he said, what are you planning on doing? I'm like, I don't know. And he said, have you ever considered studying business? I'm like, no, not really. Then he goes, okay, look, why don't you apply at that time, the University of Zambia at Indola in Kitwe.
Oh.
And it says apply. Remember those days they used to take what they were calling non-school leavers. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay, so you know, you apply against a physical application, you apply, flip, throw it, post office. And remember, you don't hear anything. And then one day, like, you're going to work, and I'm still working at the post office, and you open the newspaper, remember, it has all this list, like, you know, non-school leavers, and your name is there. So even my boss is like, oh, you're going to university. So that's how I ended up studying business at the Copperbelt University. Of course, it got renamed then. And that's pretty much how I got into business. I started enjoying that sphere. I worked for a bank. I worked for an FMCG. We're doing a lot of import and exporting. Then, again, it shows you to what I was referring to earlier. There was this big, you know, advert in the newspaper. Like, they were looking for a sales manager. Coca-Cola under Zambian Breweries. And again, remember, you tell people I want to apply for that, but nah, you're not going to make it. But Mama Diri, they won't pick you, or whatever. But again, I remember going back to that breakdancing incident. I'm like, look, it's not going to kill me if I just try. And I tried, and I got called for the interviews. You know, I came to Lusaka, was interviewed. And I think 2 days later, I got the offer. And again, you tell the same people, like, I got the, you must have known someone there. You know, Zambians were like
Not so, on your own merit, no way.
Yeah, no, you must have known someone. So, and I think the job I've had pretty much for the last, I'm actually now just sitting in corporate affairs.
Yes.
Because I've now moved away from the commercial side. And but one thing I learned with that brand is, and you know, people be like, you're still at Coca-Cola, why? And I'm like, my friend, and for me, that's been very important. Like, I have been everywhere in the world. I've been to every corner of this globe just because of my job.
Mm.
And it's not just travel, you know, it's VIP travel. Mm. I love traveling.
Mm.
Where, you know, I remember one time, I can't remember where we were going, and on that same flight, there was a minister. No one to call them out. And when we arrived there, they were shocked, like there were people waiting for us on the tarmac, not
in Coca-Cola. The, you know,
and you heard the minister ask, who are those people?
So, <That's Coca-Cola. laughs> <That's Zambian breweries. laughs>
So I love that. You know, and you know when you travel on your own,
yeah,
when you look at the hotel you're staying at and how much you're paying,
yeah,
and then when you've traveled for work, you know, that's how you realize like how much, you know. So basically I enjoyed the travel. I love travel. I've been to, you know, places you never thought you'd be.
But also, I mean, to have been there for so long, this is not a small, look, Zambia Breweries moved from Zambia Breweries to AB InBev to it's had so many faces.
So many faces.
It's such a huge organization that it's very possible to have a total life career in there,
yes,
in different pockets, and look at where you are now.
Yeah.
My mother's first job was in Zambian Breweries. She was the only woman, something or other, I should really know, but it sticks in our family, like she was the only woman doing that particular job in the, whenever it was. But it is a household name, and will never go away, even if it's been taken over. So there's an element of serious pride there.
Yeah, of course. And I think for me, certainly, because also remember my generation, we grew up drinking Coca-Cola. That's all that was there.
Yeah.
To come and work for this brand, you know, I mean, at a later stage. So it has been a great, personally, professionally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And to see, for me, I love seeing, first of all, how the organization has evolved. So even its people in there have evolved with it.
Yes.
And we've still, the fascinating part for me was within marketing. How did you manage maneuvering it as a brand or being part of that? Like, this has changed, guys. People no longer look at this.
Yeah.
Competition was coming.
Yeah.
You've got major competition now.
Of course.
All over the world.
Which is good, by the way.
Which is very good.
Yeah.
I wonder what those discussions look like, and to say, no, guys, you've got to change things now, because it's not just us. People don't want it sweet. People, what does that look like? Those, you know, to make those serious changes.
I think to your point, not just in our landscape, I think pretty much across all other landscapes, that is changing, and it's changing very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And the key now that's driving all these changes is these guys, the Gen Zs, the millennials. So I remember my first sort of like serious meeting I had, you know, like board meeting where people come in suits and laptops and you're looking at them like, wow, you know. But now you find that you're in the boardroom and there are people like, huh,
yeah,
I'm not trying to pick you up. And, you know, they're wearing like me, they're wearing Vans, and I look at them like, this is like my daughter, you know. But so to your point, that's the way pretty much, whether it doesn't matter what industry you're in, I think the millennials, you know, the Gen Zs, they're now driving the agenda. So I think it's about incorporating them into the mix. You know, what is it that they want? You know, the millennial now is very key in everything. That's why, for example, advertising now, it's not your old advertising on TV and radio, because now it's on your device. So to your point, I think that's the, and if you're old school like me, it takes you kind of like a bit to adjust. Like, look, this is the way. And you have to realize, even when you're making certain decisions, that it's not about me. It's about what is out there now and what is the new way of doing things. So I think in a nutshell, and I think it's happening pretty much across, you know, whether it doesn't matter what brand you are, what category you're in, I think it's
and
happening.
Even the industries, because also our lifestyles changed.
Yeah.
Okay. So how we used to drink,
yeah,
our, you know, Coca-Cola is not the same.
Yeah, it's way too, you know, of course.
Yeah, it has a different look. It sits at a different place on the table.
Yeah.
Wherever you are. So that's also really fascinating. So right now you are acting as...
So I'm acting at Public Affairs and Communications. And like I said, one thing I've loved about
you.
This role...
It suits you.
Because it's who I am.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also, I think, remember, my generation... Doesn't matter where you go, which industry you go, which sector, you'll always find someone you were with, either at school or at university, you know, which is not always a good thing because sometimes you're expected to perform miracles, like, you know, that person, you know, but you know, I mean, they're also bound by, you know, their organization, yeah, you know, exactly. In terms of other, yeah, so it's been great and I'm loving it, yeah.
The pressures are there. So how many years have you been there?
At the Bimin, overall, at the...
With the brand.
With the system.
With the system.
Yes, it reminds me how old I am. I think 22 now.
That's incredible.
22 years. That's a long time.
I don't know. I think the only thing I've done for 22 years is kept my name. I can't think of anything I've done for that long.
Yeah, 22 years. It's been a good journey.
Yeah. And how do you see 10 years?
And to be honest with you, difficult to say.
I know.
Because things are changing so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can think of anything 5 years ago, if you were told in 5 years' time this would be like that, you would have said, no way. But look at it now. Something, I'll give you a very good example. Something I always tell people, like, I try as much as possible not to handle cash. Remember, if you ask someone 5 years ago that you could pay, look, I love buying, you know, I'm old school, you know. So I buy bananas from the street, I buy tutenembalala. You transact on your phone. Because even the lady selling tutenembalala, she'll tell you, oh, send to my mom, and you send.
Yeah.
So now imagine 5 years ago, if you told someone that, they'd say, nah, it's not possible. So to answer your question, just think of something like that. 5 years ago, no one even thought about it to that level. Now, can you imagine 5 years from now, and to answer a question, what is going to be out there? I think,
just don't know. Think maybe we have to look at today. I was listening to a podcast this morning, actually, before your program. And it was talking about when you appreciating now, just appreciate now and go with what your mind can handle now. Because our minds can't handle so much. And when you stress them, to be thinking about the past and then what's going to happen here, it falls apart. So handle what you can handle for now, and probably that's where we need to go.
Yeah.
A little bit of ambition, like, oh, I'll do like a kama, I'll grow my maize, I'll do like a hectare. You know, just don't stretch. Things that we can possibly see. But yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
It's moving really fast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to know from the Bemba side... Like, if there's something, I know about Imbalala na Tute, Tute Nimbalala. If there's something somebody had to, you had to eat something now, and your cravings, would it be that, Tute Nimbalala?
Okay, so I can tell you, I love Tute Nimbalala. In the house, we all love
Tute Nimbalala. Cassava and groundnuts.
Cassava and chikanda.
Chikanda. Love, yeah, chikanda. But you have to find the, you've obviously found the
right. So we know where to, know the
you
best.
You have to know where to get the chikanda.
Yeah, we know that, so the chikanda, yeah, so all those. What else? Impwa, we call them imps. Never been a fan.
Imps.
Tried, but imps, yeah. But, you know, my wife loves. But for me, I think they are upon our way up of a pen. My grandfather actually used to, you know, he would just pick and...
Oh, and my mother used to... That's so my mother used to grow them actually for export.
Ah, okay.
So she'd be in the field and then she'd be just to... Oh
yeah, no. So pampa pena na we na.
Yeah. Well, okay. What about on the Banda side, Eastern side?
Yeah, interesting one. That remember, you are Banda wa Copa Belgium.
Right.
What I remember there was remember because from the east we had some relatives who used to come from Malawi.
Right.
And sometimes you'd go and visit them. I still remember, and you won't believe this. Usipa, it's a special type of carpenter, only from Lake Malawi, which you won't believe this. Last time I went to Malawi, I managed to get some, put it in my luggage. I was thinking, I hope nobody sniffs it and they tell me what's this. And I still have it frozen. I'm still looking for, waiting for the right time. Well, not me, obviously my wife's gonna, cook it. So I'm waiting for that because I can remember like it was quite bitter.
Right.
But it's very, you know, like if you ask anyone from Malawi or from there, like Usipa is like a big thing there. Like, you know, the way I was here, Vonga Kapeta, I used to be here. So that is what I can't wait to, I hope I can remember the way it used to taste. I remember it was bitter, even as a kid. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
I still love the fact that we can just go back to those tastes and enjoy that, despite the fact that you might have come off a plane from Brazil and eaten something exotic there, but still and coming back still come to, back to and the favorite. That, yeah. Tell me, what's one of your favorite destinations? Work, personal, whatever, like wait. You
know. I think because, I mean, you're asking about my comedy. I think because of, you know, the space in entertainment, I think I've been to various parts of the US, but I think I found LA. I think it has, you know, just walking on Hollywood Boulevard, you know, where they show you, this is where the Oscars are done. And I remember when we went for a Hollywood tour, I know when you remember watching Beverly Hills Cop back then.
Of course.
Now in Beverly Hills, we're like, wow. Yeah. Okay. So I think the stand-up comedy scene obviously is bigger in LA than it is in New York. And so that's the part
Why would it, because of Hollywood? Why would it be bigger?
I don't
bigger?
Think it's because of Hollywood. I think, so people often think it's New York, but you find a lot of stuff like from the stand-up, obviously like you start in LA and then like when you've made it, then now New York becomes the, but the good thing I like there's so many, at every corner, there's a, you know, there's an open mic club where you just pitch up.
So how did you weave that into this career?
It's interesting, actually. Again, it goes to finding yourself, like what is it that you love, that you believe you're good at? Forget about work, but what is it? And I think I've always considered myself a funny person. So, you know, even when you're talking with friends, they'll always be laughing. But that doesn't mean you're funny. And you learn that the hard way. Because you think, you know, you're watching a stand-up comedian and like, I can do that. So you say, let me do this. And then you realize that it's not that easy. So I've always loved comedy. I take myself as a very funny person who likes being funny, saying funny things. So that's why I'm like, you know what?
But they're not intentional, right? It's not intentional.
No, it's just how you are, yeah.
And your mind, that's how your mind works. And that's see why, the funny side to something.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and again, through reading all these motivational speeches, listening, you know, tell you, if you want to do this, you have to go out and get. So I'm like, okay, let me try this. But obviously, didn't know where to start. So, you know, you do a bit of research and then you end up... So there's a place in London, Comedy Virgins, as the name says, if you're doing it for the first time. So I went and broke my virginity there. That was in 2018. And what was funny was I was so scared. But because you know you're with peers, then afterwards, you know, you're at the break and everybody's asking.
But is it like an open mic?
Yes, an open mic thing. You book your name and whatever on the day. I had, I think, a couple of friends who live in London said, you should come, you know. And I went with my wife, obviously. So the first time, I mean, I was on stage, I was scared, Steve. But I realized afterwards, because they give you a video after, like, actually, it wasn't bad. And people were asking you, okay, how long have you done this? I'm like, no, this was my first time. And then obviously, like, how do you take it to the next level? Then the good thing is COVID came. Well, I know, I mean that, you know, from, because now instead of actually traveling and attending, you know, you actually did things online. Mm-hmm. So you find that, you know, you, and again, because of the time difference, most of the classes I was attending were from LA. It's 9 hours between us and them.
Yes.
So I find that it's like 02 local time. And if it's during the week, if it's 2 hours, it means you have to wake up at 12 classes. Like, yeah, comedy classes. That's when you start learning and you tell yourself, I didn't know anything. You
I was about to ask how it happens in the
background. So it's structured. So, you know, whenever you see someone on stage, it's structured. Yeah. You know, you think that they're just talking. So you start learning that there's structure. It's like Kung Fu. You know, when you watch Kung Fu, to an expert, you tell you, that's from the east of China, or that's that technique. But to a layman, it would just be like Kung Fu. So standard hands is going the same. Everywhere. Yeah. You look at someone, you know what style they're doing. You can predict what they're going to say next. That's how it works. So you learn that. And then because there were all these open mics on Zoom, which was terrible, you know, having stand up on Zoom is terrible, I tell you. So when COVID ended, now the place, then you could actually go and perform. And what was so nice is meeting all those people, you know, who are your classmates. You actually meet, and that, there's a joke actually that your friends on Facebook can turn out to be real friends because you actually meet, and then you watch different people's careers progress, you know. And it's good to know that, look, I was in class with that guy. Now I've seen him, he's got a Netflix special and all that. So it kind of like motivates you.
And then that's really interesting, actually. So in terms of the language, tone, approach, your approach is aimed at who?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're doing this in the States,
yeah,
or now online is to everybody, but are you throwing in, is there a Zambian element, yeah, in it?
So what they teach you when you're in, when you're doing stand-up is it's about you. What frustrates you, you know? What, for example, what makes you a Zambian? And you'd ask me, like, I'll give you an example. You know, there's this Black Lives Matter thing. In this, the big thing there is, but so when you're on there, if you're in to make it relevant, and say, look, where I come from, our cops, they don't discriminate, you know, there's no Black Lives Matter because they just shoot everybody, you know. So your right. Which our your cops personal. Do, by the way. So it's about your personal trauma, and you, but you try and make it relevant to the people. One thing that has happened in the comedy world is like in everything else, because of diversity. So people are looking for, like in stand-up comedy, they say, no disrespect, if you're not a Caucasian male, you stand a better chance. Because remember, like, that's what has been there all along, you know, like you're male, Caucasian. So now anything else that comes out that is different, you know, because of diversity, people are looking, so they'll probably look at it. We actually get diversity quotas. I had a scholarship to study because of my diversity. You know, you're from Africa, you're not male Caucasian, you're straight, you know, thank God for that. So, you know, so so it shows that diversity is become a big thing. I mean, look at Trevor Noah and what he's managed to do. Remember, he tells his stories about how he was growing up. Yeah, yes. So it's like that.
Awesome. But what about bring it here?
So a lot of people always ask me that. Oh, why don't you do? And I'm like, I think I've chosen a certain path.
Yeah.
And one of the things they tell you is, don't do it because you want to be big. Just do it because you want to have fun. So I think for me now, that's the space that I'm in at the moment. Okay. And I follow a lot of local comedians, by the way, just so that you know, I love what they're doing. I follow them on TikTok. I love their style, and it shows us that Zambians, we have a lot of talent, you know, but TikTok, I think, has brought people out who previously they were in a shell. And you see, by just being yourself, by just being Zambian, you know, blogging in Bemba, it brings out that authenticity, you know. So that's the path that I've chosen. At one time, I can tell you, they will cross. That I can tell you that.
I'm sure
and
they
then
will.
You'll see me.
Tell me, out of the many people, places, experiences you've had, when you sit and look back and think, you know, without this person, my life would have been very different. Who'd that be?
I think I'd say my dad.
Mm.
And I'll tell you why. My dad, in so many ways, reminds me of Nelson Mandela. Like, my dad was very humble. You remember, as a parent, he never shout. I don't ever remind him of screaming or shouting, but he was very funny. And now, you know, now, like I said, now that I'm in this space, you actually remember that he was actually a funny guy. He would say, you know, things like every evening when he comes home, for him, how many men do that? They take a bath and they apply cologne. And then he's like, no, look, guys, in case I die in the night, you know, I want, when people come to get me, I should be smelling good, you know. So it's funny, you know. And he had a lot of things about being yourself, about being truthful to yourself, being kind to other people. I mean, he always drove those messages and just be who you are. Don't pretend. It doesn't matter where you come from, you know. So, and I think that has been, I try to teach the same to my kids, you know, like, just be who you are. Don't pretend. If you don't have this, it's fine, you know. There would be days, I remember, especially like after he had retired, he'd be going through difficult times and he'd just laugh and say, guys, don't worry. And that was the same time Bobby McFerrin's song came out. Don't worry, be happy, you know.
Yeah.
And he'd just take things, I mean, these are serious issues, but he'd just take them so lightly, like, you know what, don't worry, be happy.
This is a really hard one for you. Must be a really hard one. So I have to find the mood to say this is what I... So you're going to leave here today. We've had a great conversation. You're going to get home. What song are you going to play?
In fact, right in the car. Or what's on or what song I'll play?
Oh, actually, even what's in your car?
In the car. So on my car, like the playlist I usually always have is just 80s and 90s. That's
I know. I but that's why it's really hard for me to ask you to pick.
So one of the songs that I like, that even sometimes when you have conferences, you know, they tell you pick a song to come into.
Yeah.
I always choose This Is How We Do It, Montel Jordan, you know, because again, it just speaks, guys, this is how you do it. And yeah. So.
Do you remember where you were when it came out?
Yes. I had just gotten into work then, bachelor. And I think we used to go out every weekend, you know, with my friends. And I remember when it came out, it was, what was it, Great Wall? Remember the Great Wall? Yeah. So
for me, it was Subterranea. Nightclub in London.
Okay, London.
I'm like, no. Last question for you, because I think I like the part about the traveling and the fact that you've traveled everywhere. So I'm going to give you what I do. I listen to a lot of music on YouTube, but the image is really important because then I dream. So I get images where it's a hotel or a spot and it's going to be like Mediterranean and there's water and it's beautiful. And then I like, this is where I want to be. And then I spend my whole day at the office thinking this is where I'm going to be. Favorite spot, favorite hotel. That's what I want. Hotel. I'm obsessed with the hotel. Favorite hotel. You're like, this is the one.
I think the Shangri-La in Singapore was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I still remember, and you know, because I watch a lot of Formula One, so you know, every time they're watching, it's the pre-race and they show it, and the memories just come, you know, flying. Because I mean, that was an amazing hotel.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have come from a Formula One family, so we won't start that conversation. No, that's good to know. We know what Coca-Cola need to give you on your retirement.
I wonder what, really.
2 weeks at the Shangri-La. So, Panji, thank you so much. I've learned about the comedian. I've learned about the breakdancer. And you're not getting away with this. Because I need to say, I'm going to take a picture.
Be breakdancer.
I'm going to take a video of you here. I've learned about the Coca-Cola man. I've learned about your wide travel and your sincere love for your foods. What you like to hear, your family, your children, and really what has made Panji. I'll have to stay behind you for the next couple of years and see where we're going. Thank you for the conversation, taking your time out on a really important day for me, for everybody, for today. And hopefully speak and see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I think I was saying thank you very much to Gwazi magazine. Like I said, that magazine I've read pretty much. Before then, like, you know, when you're on a domestic flight, you'd read it. And I started loving the content. When I saw some of the interviews you'd have with different people, again, taking you back to my original story, I knew that one day I'm going to be. I didn't push, I didn't prompt anything, but I just knew that one day. So it's a real honor for me. And I feel really privileged that for having me. And thank you very much.
Thank you so much. There's no us without you, so we say thank you.